This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Malam Keen, everyone. This is Deese, host of The Social Hour. Oh, that? That's just me playing the piano. I'm pretty good, aren't I? You know what else I'm good at? Making people laugh and talking to people, but more importantly, making you think sometimes. So tune into The Social Hour every Tuesday and Thursday at DeeseComedy.com and hear me talk to people like Libertarian presidential candidate Joe Jorgensen, comedian Steve Hofstetter, creator of The Savage Dragon and co-founder of Image Comics, Eric Larson, and the guy who owns the weed shop on the corner by my house. We've got range, just like my abilities on this piano. Listen to me mix it up here. We'll just let that play. I'll see you this week on The Social Hour. Da-na-na-na. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is the Dollar Bin Podcast, and I'm your host, Deese Casillas. This is a brand new show that I'm doing every single week where I review comic books. We're going to be going through some old trade paperbacks, some kind of one-off obscure stuff. Probably not a lot of big-time comics. We know those are good or bad, or you've read them. We're going to go through a bunch of stuff that you probably have never read or maybe have and want to talk about or hear other people's opinions. And then I'm going to go through a comic book I bought in the dollar bin. It's not just a clever name, folks. And we're going to talk about that, too. For those of you who don't know me, I am a comedian, writer, and host of the Social Hour podcast. New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday on DeeseComedy.com. You can follow me on Instagram at Deese.comedy and DeeseComedy on Twitter and Deese.casillas on the Facebook or the Social Hour on Facebook when I'm not banned, which, as we record this, I am. So I'm doing the show because I love comic books, and during this quarantine, I've been spending a lot more time reading them. People ask me what I've been doing with my time during quarantine and also what I'm doing with my stimulus checks, and those are the same answer: comic books. Lots of trade paperbacks, and we're going to go through them all and take a look and talk about them, guys, because there's some fun stuff out there. I kind of have an obscure past with comic books. I was a big-time collector. I had probably 25,000 individual issues, but I had a weird taste in comics. I loved the X-Men, but I really loved X-Factor. I was like kind of the weird stuff. Like, Avengers was cool. West Coast Avengers, boom, nailed it. Loved them so much more. Yeah, Batman was badass, but Azrael kicked ass. So those are the kind of things we're going to get into. We're going to talk some X-Men, some mainstream stuff, some bigger Image titles, but I kind of want to talk this weird stuff that some people have read and like, and some people have maybe never gotten around to, or maybe push those people who wouldn't necessarily read an obscure Image book to maybe go check it out. We appreciate you coming around and taking a listen to the first episode. Like I said, I have a weird history with comic books. I kind of have a weird PTSD, actually, because I had a huge collection of over 25,000 individual comic books worth a lot of money. Almost every single issue of the Uncanny X-Men run, X-Men, and so much more, and it all got stolen. When I moved from California to Washington State, I put everything in a storage unit for a couple months. When I came back, gone. Real sad, guys. So going into comic book stores can be traumatic for me, but I finally gotten over it. And I'm just reading trade paperbacks. Very few individual issues anymore. I feel like the trade paperback is just easier to store. It's easier to read. You know, in the day of Netflix, you want to binge read something too. I don't want to wait months and months and months to figure out what's going on in East of West, which we'll probably talk about down the road. I did just finish that. Great book by Jonathan Hickman. So guys, however you collect, whatever you read, this show is for you. You can get some good information and get some opinions and maybe some laughs too. So as you know by now, this show is called The Dollar Bin for a couple reasons. We all have that dollar bin at our local comic book store, and we're going to be going through and rating comics that I bought from the dollar bin. Like I said, I liked obscure stuff, so I used to love reading comics out of the dollar bin. It was a lot of fun. You get some weird crap, but some gems. So we're going to rate those as well as trade paperbacks. We're going to do one trade paperback, one comic book every episode. So that's it, guys. And everything I will rate from a dollar, is it a dollar bin trade paperback or comic, all the way up to a $10 one. That is the best. Obviously, some trade paperbacks cost more than that, but that's the rating system we're going with. You get the idea, guys. On today's episode of the show, we are going to be reviewing Bloodstrike, Born Under a Bad Sign. Bloodstrike is a character developed by Rob Liefeld and his Extreme Comics imprint from Image Comics. For those of you who don't know, Rob Liefeld came up in the 80s and 90s, most notably on New Mutants, which later developed into X-Force, where Deadpool was first premiered, as well as Cable and many other characters he helped co-create. That was an interesting time in comic books. It was a lot of flash, not a lot of substance. If you go back and read that era, Jim Lee, Mark Silvestri, Wills Portacio, and Rob Liefeld, all these guys at Marvel Comics were really fantastic artists, but it was a lot of just flash. The stories were kind of losing track a little bit, and they were really putting the stories in the hands of these artists because they were so wildly popular. People don't realize Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld were starring in Levi jeans commercials in the early 90s. That's how freaking popular these guys are. Can you imagine any artist now, a comic book artist now, being in a Levi's commercial? It never happened. So in 1992, when all these guys split and created Image Comics, Rob Liefeld's Extreme imprint was where his characters got homed. Young Blood was actually the first release from Image Comics in 1992, dated April of 1992. And then in the next 14 years, they made maybe three other books, all number ones. They were wrought with delays and lots of premiere issues. They premiered a lot of issues, not a lot of series. Youngblood was pretty impressive at the time. It was the first independent title to be a number one bestseller. That was pretty crazy. They really rocked the industry and changed the way comics were made, for good or bad. Some ways good, some ways bad. But Bloodstrike was one of the earlier incarnations or kind of teams in the Extreme universe. There's Young Blood, Blood Strike, Wolf Blood, Blood Wolf, Younger Blood, New Blood, Period Blood. There were a lot of bloods. Blood was a big theme in the universe. Why wasn't it called the Blood Universe? Years after Rob Liefeld came and went and came and went from Image Comics several times, it seemed like, a lot of his properties tried to be retooled and rebooted. Of course, Young Blood, among others, Brigade, which was kind of a independent Young Blood type team, and also Blood Strike. But in the mid 2010, around there, a lot of characters that kind of had some notoriety in the early days with Extreme started to get rebooted by actually talented creators. It's kind of interesting. Glory, Prophet, Young Blood with Joe Casey, which we're actually going to talk about in a later episode. All these guys kind of started getting retooled. People my age who grew up with these characters in the time when they were just kind of vapid were really looking for deeper, better comic books. And I think they made a good call because they took these noticeable characters and made them into deep, better, entertaining comic books and utilize them. They had some cachet, but really were just kind of throwaway characters. They were all the same. So it was nice that people took them and morphed them into something even more than that. Bloodstrike, Born Under a Bad Sun, picks up with issue number 26 of Bloodstrike. Now, this comic book hadn't been printed in almost 18 years. And actually, issue number 24 3 and 24 of this book never got printed at all. Issues 1 through 23 were printed way back in the 90s. And then they did an issue number 25, which was supposed to be like the future of Extreme comic books. And everything jumped to the future. And they told you where this book will be at issue number 25. Then they stopped printing the comic book. And we never bridged that gap. So they kind of ignore that, which is nice, and they jump right to issue number 26, pick up. Interesting that they do the same numbering, kind of confusing for collectors, but also, as a purist, I do kind of like that also, because technically the book was never canceled. They just stopped doing it. So it picks up at number 26. This book collects 26 through 30, which is the majority of the run of this creative team. It was writer and artist Tim Seeley, who's most popular for Hack Slash, as well as the artist Francesco Gaston, who did this run with them. He's also done the Hulk, Miss Marvel, a great artist, an interesting pairing for this kind of darker themed violent book. He's a little more cartoony. The coloring is very bright. But it seems to work for some reason. Maybe the juxtaposition of the extreme violence, not so darkened down with by certain artists, makes it a little bit more palatable and also makes kind of the irreverence of the book land a little bit more because you kind of realize what they're doing. Some of it's tongue-in-cheek. It's intentionally violent to kind of keep up with the past themes. They're also making fun of it, but also using it as a real platform to push this book forward. And that juxtaposition of Gaston's art, I think, helps make that palatable for the reader. And it doesn't seem like it's just trying to be hardcore and extreme, because you have some art that is a little bit softer, for lack of a better term. And I don't mean that as a pejorative. It's just a little more cartoony. It's a little brighter. The creative team does a great job of quickly getting us up to speed and reintroducing the characters. We're not bogged down by years of convoluted extreme universes story. You know, the multitude of crossovers, the reboots, where you're at in continuity, if the awesome universe counts, extreme judgment. All that stuff is kind of ignored, and they just give you the nuts and bolts and allow you to work from there. They introduce Cabot Stone, who is the main character. He was the leader of Bloodstrike and then became just Bloodstrike. Bloodstroke? Bloodstrick. What is a singular Bloodstrike? Anyway, it's told through the lens of them going through kind of psychiatric detox after going on these missions, which helps kind of break the characters down and allow them to narrate it in an interesting fashion, as well as give you their point of view outside of just being these violent, essentially assassins for the government. It's a great flip side to what Young Blood is as a product, especially, you know, it's covered a lot in Young Blood series. In the original, they're this superhero team that's basically famous and celebrities, which was the kind of the idea behind the whole thing. That's kind of explored even more through different series. Again, Joe Casey's Young Blood series, Focus Tested, was the first trade paperback he is collected in. That is, again, is something we'll talk about later in later episodes. But they do a good job of doing the flip side of this and showing that these people are also work for the government, but they're just their kind of dark underbelly assassins. They don't get any of the fanfare being on the Tonight Show and things of that nature. But they really get you back into knowing this whole team very quickly. I mean, you've got five issues here. It covers most of an arc, essentially, gets you up to speed with all the characters, the extra cast, you know, your supporting roles, and some B plots and C plots that are happening. And keeps everything moving. And it's really not too violent. There's a couple scenes where you can tell it's meant to be extreme, but they do a good job of kind of tapering it and not letting that rule the whole book. Cabot Stone, the main character, again, is a very deep character. Realistically, he's one of the characters in the extreme universe that has some of the best history, and probably most complex. He's the brother of John Stone, who was the leader of Brigade, which was kind of the shitty version of Young Blood, if you can do that map. Except they're kind of in flipped roles, because Brigade was more of a hero team, and John Stone was kind of an asshole. And Cabot Stone is kind of a lovable mercenary. He's doing bad things, but really because it's a job. At his core, he's a good guy, and he wants good things for everyone. I don't know if this is characterization that they explored in other parts of the extreme universe ever, but they did a good job of kind of showing that here and how really Cabot is kind of obviously is the lead in this book, a protagonist, but also made to be kind of a false antagonist in a sense, where he was really put in the light of being a villain, but never a bad guy. They do give you a little bit more depth to the rest of the Bloodstrike crew. It's essentially similar ones to the original cast, Shogun, Foreplay, Deadlock, and Tag. Deadlock was kind of a cheap Wolverine ripoff. Every team has to have a Wolverine ripoff. He literally looked like Wolverine in red and silver in the original run. He has a more unique look now, a little armored up, kind of changed his attitude a little, so he would be a little bit less of, again, you're just average 90s Wolverine ripoff, which there's a million of. For characters that never really had a history at all or much of a backstory that anyone could follow necessarily, again, all the reboots, they do a good job of making you feel for these characters and get to know them pretty well, pretty fast. Cabot, Bloodstrike himself, you know quickly, you know a lot about. They follow him mostly. I would love to see more about the backup team, the rest of the squad. You get to know them a little bit, but only in the last half of these five issues. I would like to get to know them a little bit more, a little faster. But, you know, they make you really like Cabot. He's kind of the main guy, and that's kind of all you need. There's some religious aspects played into this, some existentialism, kind of how death affects us all. You know, what life would be like if we knew we couldn't die and how miserable we'd be. It's an interesting concept. I'm not sure how much Tim Seeley was really trying to dive into this or if it's just used as a plot device. But I think it plays really well for a guy who becomes kind of, a sympathetic asshole in Cabot. He's a guy you feel bad for. He kind of wants to die. He wants to do the right thing, but he's forced into this kind of living this Groundhog's Day of being used again and again and again and trying not to be nefarious about it. There's a point where he even says he's known to kind of break the rules. At the end of the day, I would put Bloodstrike, Born Under a Bad Sign, in the $7 bin. It's not a 10. It's not an 8 or a 9. It's good. It's solid. It's everything you want from a comic book. The art is great. The story is fast-paced. Again, you're not fully invested in these characters. They've never really had a backstory yet, so it's a little harder to be more attached to them. But they do a good job of getting you into them very quickly. So if these had a little more depth, it'd be a little bit faster and easier to get the story going. But still, Bloodstrike, Born Under a Bad Sign, going in the $7 bin. And now for our dollar comic book of the week, we go to 1994's Battlestone number one. I thought since we were reviewing Bloodstrike and it had so much to do with Battlestone also, we'd review Battlestone number one because it was in the stack of dollar comics I bought. Again, Image Comics shaped my youth and shaped the way I looked at comics for so long. And that didn't change until, I don't know, probably the late 90s when guys like Joe Casey and Mark Millar and Bendis and Brian K. Vaughan and Grant Morrison started writing more stuff that really put it more back on the writers and gave them so much more creativity and power to write really in-depth comic books again. Unlike Battlestone, which was just in the Image boom, 1994, they were cranking out anything they could. Battlestone number one, again, came out in 1994. Credits go to Rob Liefeld for the plot. I mean, did he even have to turn in a new plot every time? Or was it just a stock format he used? He's like, guys with large arms and no feet, hold knives and guns, grimace, splice in dialogue from the Predator, and Finn. Scripted by Eric Stevenson, who I don't know if I envy or feel bad for. He made a deal with the devil in working with Rob Liefeld, and this is his penance. Like, just to interpret Rob Liefeld plots, what did he do in a former life to deserve this? Really, anything, any Rob Liefeld plot could be written on a cocktail napkin. Guns, tits, guns, tits, guns, tits, knives, tits. And this book is drawn by Merritt Michaels, a.k.a. Rob Liefeld, if you ordered him on the Wish app. This book starts out as all extreme books do. A group of mercenaries that you don't know and have cool names like Dutch and Soldier and Rip Chain, Blood Chain, Chain Blood, Death Chain, Claw Blood, Slice Star, War Axe. They're all just kind of hanging out in the sewer looking for the Ninja Turtles? there's not a lot of plot. There's not a lot of development. There's a predicament. They get attacked by a nondescript group of assassins who are in mechanical assassin wear. And then we get some backstory about John Stone and how he was kind of an asshole to his brother Cabot and beats him up, which further perpetuates what we talked about in the Bloodstrike review, where Cabot was kind of the good guy. John was a dick, but he ended up being the hero, which is a really weird turn of events. Essentially, all these guys are part of what is known as the New Gene Program, which I think Amway sells and is a pyramid scheme. I don't have an extra $150 and I can't come to a lot of meetings. Really, it's basically the Weapon X project from Marvel. He can regenerate himself, and he's able to wear shoulder pads that any other human would be incapable of holding up and still turn their head. And that's basically it. It seems as if they're kind of making Battlestone a bad guy in this. Besides that, they give you some pathos. Again, the backstory of John and Cabot when they were kids. They try and make you feel for him. But really, it just makes John look like an asshole, and it makes you kind of not like him. And they make it you feel like he's about to be an assassin, and then you like him even less. Again, there's nothing redeemable about him. You know, you have characters like Deadpool, who's funny and has some softness to him. Even Cabot and Bloodstrike, again, has some softness to him and some regret for what he does and thinks about his death. These guys just wanted to be literally extreme, and that's all it was. There was no depth to it, and that's kind of what that era of Image Comics was, especially Rob Liefeld's Extreme Studios. So sadly, Battlestone number one, as much as I loved you when I was a kid, you're a dollar bin comic. All right, guys, well, that's all for the Dollar Bin Podcast. I've been Deese Casillas. Make sure you go to Deese.comedy, follow all the shows. Again, new episodes of The Social Hour, the main podcast, every Tuesday and Thursday. Some Imperfections, which is an advice podcast I do with Abby Buckenberger and Sierra Cossey. They are certified life coaches. You can follow us on some.imperfections on Instagram. We do take questions and topics, so feel free to message us. You can message us anonymously. Our link for that is on our Instagram page. We answer all kinds of questions about life, love, and more. They're certified life coaches. I'm a comedian who tells dick jokes and used to eat a lot of acid. Used to. So check that out and go to deesecomedy.com. We've got new sketch comedy, all kinds of stuff that comes out regularly, The Social Minute, a live news show that comes out every Monday, and more. And now the Dollar Bin Podcast. New episodes every Friday, guys. We're going to be bringing you all kinds of stuff. If you want me to review something specific or there's something you think I should read, let me know. I'd love to read it. I've got a big list of stuff, but I'm always down for more. Or if you have some dollar comics that you think should be reviewed, let's talk about it. Also, guys, go to The Social Hour. I interviewed Eric Larson, the creator of Savage Dragon. I interviewed Joe Casey, who's written Superman, Wolverine, X-Men, Avengers, Wildcats. His run on Wildcats, one of my favorite of all times. Another thing we're going to talk about at some point. And Ryland Grant, who won a Ringo Award for Best Series, Best Writer for Aberrant and Banjax and more. So we've got, and Fabian Nicienza, the co-creator of Deadpool, is going to be on an upcoming episode too. So that has a lot of comic book stuff on there also, guys. But come back next Friday. We're going to review another trade paperback and another Dollar Bin comic. For the Dollar Bin Podcast, I've been Deese Casillas. Peace.